North South Connection podcast listeners, welcome back to the year that was. And because this is dropping on Thanksgiving week, I just want to talk about a little bit what I'm thankful for. And I've just been really thankful to be able to not only to present this project that I've worked on forever, but for every single person that's taken the time to listen. If you've taken the time to listen to this, if you've subscribed to the North South Connection Podcast Network, if you've supported any of our other shows, if you've left me comments about the year that was, I'm really grateful. And I want to thank you because that's what's kind of making this fun. Like, I probably wouldn't do it if I thought it had zero audience. So thanks. And I hope I can continue to bring these to you at a decent quality. I want to start off this week's by, I'm going to start with a comment that I got. It's from Ryan Gray, and he says, I'm kind of sad this isn't higher on the list, or lower, however Aaron looks at it. I like this year a lot. It's sneaky awesome. I assume the tag team division doesn't score well. SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and the Rumble are all above average. Mania 25 is top 5 to 7-ish. What's going on here, Aaron? And I'll be honest, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I assumed this year would finish much higher on the list. If we're doing 2005. And it maybe it's a condemnation of my whole system. But who knows? But welcome to the year that was. The only podcast that is based on me wasting 3 years of my life. There's no other podcast based on me wasting any portions of my life. I took 3 years of my life and watched every single WWE pay-per-view, ranked the matches, ranked the years, and here we are, 2005. So I was totally locked in on this year. I was watching Raw every week. I was excited about the direction the company was going in for about half the year. And like I said, Ryan, I'm not sure what happened here, but let's try to unpack this and figure it out. Here's what I do know. This is episode 17 of the year that was, and we are dealing with the 19th best year in WWE pay-per-view history by my metrics, which admittedly are flawed and not perfect at all. But that's the concept of the show. What we do here is we evaluate the years on 12 categories, factor in any 4-star plus matches, punish any sub 2-star matches. And what I think is interesting here is 2005 finished a mere 4 points behind number 18. And since I'm looking so far at 35 years of WWE pay-per-views, 18 is the median. So it's just like a tad below the middle, which feels weird for 2005. But let's try to figure out why. Here's some through lines as I was going over it. Get ready for rematches, because you're going to get rematches in 05, good and bad. And I think, and we'll touch on this more as we go, but I think guys who come into 05 extremely hot are not as hot as they were at the end of the year. And I think that in itself probably is maybe the biggest reason why this is a bit below average in the years. WWE has a plan. They will not deviate from it no matter what. They're also incapable of nuance. But to counter all of those negatives, the in-ring guys here are as good as they have ever been. So the first category we look at is matches. I had this ranked 21st out of 35 for matches. The average match rating for the year is 2.84. So just below good on the average. And what I was kind of like shocked at, there's 104 matches on the year. And 52 of them are at least good, and 52 of them are boring to bad. So a really interesting 50-50 split on good versus boring to bad. And this is really one of the fears in my journey that I don't give a 5-star match to. I'm pretty liberal with 5-star matches. I think in the 35 years, I want to say I have like 40, which is still to me, it's less than 2. It's like 1.5%, which I think is totally fair to do. But this is a year that doesn't have one. But it has 13 great matches, so 4 stars and up. And that's quite high. It's almost one per month. And it does average out to about to that. When I looked at it, there's 13 4-star matches across 8 different shows. So, look, 21st out of 35 isn't horrible or anything. But you can see, again, it's just below the average. And I'm going to keep coming back to this because I'm kind of basing it on Ryan's point that everything was above average. I think some things were and some things were quite a bit above average. But I think for the most, everything is like a little bit below average. Just a tad. And a couple things are well below. And that's what happens. Looking at the matches, poor Undertaker. Why does the company hate Undertaker in 2005? Besides when they put him with Orton? I mean, he almost single-handedly brings down the average for the whole year, as he's forced to carry cousin of Roman Reigns, Luther Reigns, Muhammad Hassan, Heidenreich. Why are they still putting him in the ring with all these guys? Big Show had to fight a sumo wrestler. Kane and Snitsky continue their feud. Christy Hemme had matches on pay-per-view. We're going to talk about her later. And look, I don't want to speak ill of the dead. Okay, I love Eddie Guerrero as much as the next person. But Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio have a very good feud. Unfortunately, because our opinions of both these guys are so high, very good is kind of a disappointment. And that's how great they are. I think what ends up hurting this is we have 15 matches that are below 2 stars. And that's high. That's high. And when you look at like the people populated in these matches, you get a little bit of what we talked about. Undertaker Muhammad Hassan, Undertaker Heidenreich. But like then there's some other weird stuff. Like Bobby Lashley's kind of debuting here. And he's got Simon Dean. Like it's just a nothing match, but it's not well executed. Eugene is teaming with Jimmy Snuka at Taboo Tuesday. It's Rob Conway and Tomko. I can't imagine a weirder combination of guys possible. Melina is good, but then she's fighting Tori Wilson in bra and panties matches. There's just too much crap to balance out, to hurt the good. And then, I mean, even things that like should be good kind of delve into what I call, like as soon as you get to 2.5, you're like, it's okay, but it's not hurting the show. It might be boring. So, you know, we're dealing with Matt Hardy and JBL. We're dealing with The Big Show and Snitsky. Snitsky's in a lot of crap. And a match like Juventud Guerrera and Kid Cash from Armageddon, for me, is a 2.5-star match, and that's just a shame. So is Kane and Viscera. It's a shame that they got a match on a pay-per-view. But whatever, okay? Let's talk about the worst match of the year, okay? And before that, look, I want to talk about a match that almost is the worst match. And that's Trish Stratus versus Christy Hemme from WrestleMania. And look, I'm going to be honest. I love Christy Hemme, all right? On Tia Never Dies with JT and Jenny, which airs every second Tuesday in tandem with the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast by Jacob Williams, going through the Ruthless Aggressive era. Great shows, both of them. I don't like saying great about my own shows. My show's okay. But Jake's is really great, and you should give it a try. Ruthlessly Aggressive on Tuesdays. But on Tia Never Dies with JT and Jenny, I really talk up Francine as like the wrestling woman of my dreams. But I'm going to let you know a secret. It's Christy, all right? And I don't know why. Perhaps it's her spunk. But I've never been more attracted to any woman in wrestling. And this is coming from someone who was 16 when Sunny hit it big, right? So I don't know what it is. And I'm not saying this to oogle over Christy Hemme. I'm just kind of sharing that with you. Believe me, I oogle her enough on my own. I say it to contrast because like it's not that I don't like her, but she might be the worst wrestler I have ever seen. And that's saying something. She's too small. Nothing looks right. And poor Trish. She's you know, she tries to be... Trish is really good at this point, but she's not a miracle worker. And she gets dragged down by Christy. But let's talk about the worst match of the year. Worst match of the year from the Survivor Series. Triple H... No, it's Eric Bischoff versus Teddy Long. And this is from the Palmer Cannon era of SmackDown. And to think, this is where they used to give these fucks names worse than even exist now. At least now they try to mix famous names together. Like when they're naming someone in NXT. I know that on the Place of the Nation P2P NXT, they do this gimmick where they have developmental names. But what they do in developmental now is they just mix things that are already popular. So like, oh, well, he looks like Apollo Creed and Terry Crews. Let's call him Apollo Crews. Law Nation? Nope. I swear, like, Palmer Cannon is such a bad name, but I bet if he'd been named, like, Tyrion Seinfeld, he would have been, like, a multiple-time world champion. And then again, I say that, but WWE doesn't have the greatest track record with Jewish wrestlers not named Goldberg. They made Barry Horowitz a nerd and gave him a pocket protector, a white button-up shirt and glasses in his pre-match photo, so... And he never wore that shirt once to the ring, and I don't know why I'm talking about Barry Horowitz. What do you want me to say about Eric Bischoff and Teddy Long, okay? What I don't understand is how Teddy Long, a guy who's been in the business perhaps since the beginning of time, can be so bad at wrestling in the ring. And I don't expect him to be a genius or a genius of the sky or any of that bullshit, but why can't he take a single offensive move and look good? Why is there a booger man under the ring? How did Long have a longer run as GM than Eric Bischoff? So many questions, but the least of which is, why did they book this match? Eric Bischoff, Teddy Long. Survivor Series, worst match of the year. Let's go through the top five matches. I got some honorable mentions I like to hit. And normally with the honorable mentions, I'm usually hitting all the matches that hit 4 stars for me. So I got Undertaker, Orton at WrestleMania, Cena versus Christian versus Jericho at Vengeance, Cena versus Jericho at SummerSlam, Edge versus Matt Hardy, cage match from Unforgiven, which I really like. Hogan, we won't talk about it again, but I really like it. Hogan versus Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam. Batista versus Triple H at Hell in a Cell, which I have at 4 stars. I get shit from JT because I don't have it at like 5 3/4. But that's okay. But I love the match. I think it's really good. Flair versus Triple H, Taboo Tuesday, and the Money in the Bank ladder match. So those are the matches that don't make the top five. Number five, the Royal Rumble. So I have it at 4 1/4. And I think it's a really good Rumble. If you can get past the obvious bullying of Daniel Pruder and Muhammad Hassan, it's really good. I think what they do to Pruder is kind of shitty. Like, I know he's an asshole and he tried to tap out Angle, but this is a company that's always touting, like, you gotta grab the brass ring. Like, whatever, man. Like, you don't have to, like, purposely have your three, like, hardest choppers beat the shit out of him in the middle of the ring, right? Like, and look, maybe this is a sign of what's to come. But Benoit looked like he was really enjoying hurting Pruder. And then Holly comes out, the biggest bully of them all, and slaps the shit out of him, you know? I don't know. Maybe they had something with Pruder. Maybe not, right? But they certainly couldn't have proceeded after they bullied the shit out of him here. And then Muhammad Hassan, where, like, the whole Rumble stops to throw him out just because he's Muslim. Like, whatever. It's dumb. Rey Mysterio, though, is really good in this match. I think he's a great Iron Man. The finale of Batista and John Cena is wonderful. I'll talk more about the match later. Number four, John Cena versus JBL Judgment Day, I Quit. My goodness, if this was the type of match we got at WrestleMania instead of the pedestrian title match we got, I think we'd be talking about a different WrestleMania. This was a totally legitimizing match for Cena as champion. It's a bloodbath in the best possible way. I think it's easily JBL's best singles match of all time. Not that the bar is that high for that one. And you can chant Cena can't wrestle all you want at these events, and there might be some truth to it. But the man can certainly put together a convincing and exciting fight. It wasn't JBL who carried this, it was Cena. JBL never carried anyone unless it was to the shower for some sort of initiation. So I like this match. I love this match. Number four, best match of the year. Number three, a match recently featured on No Holds Barred. Where we did a classic match watch. JT and I were joined by Chad Campbell for this one. No Holds Barred runs almost every Saturday of the month as JT and I doing lists. And on off Saturdays, you might get JT's mailbag, which I listened to this week, and I enjoyed quite a bit, so keep sending him the questions. But we covered this on No Holds Barred. Triple H versus Ric Flair from the Survivor Series. So Survivor Series has the worst match of the year and the third best match of the year. By my standards. Maybe your mileage may vary. It's a last man standing, 4.5 stars. Holy shit, what a war. And when we watched it recently, it held up super well. And it's weird because it has things I usually hate in matches. Number one, it's last man standing, which I think is a death knell to almost any match. And Triple H. But Ric Flair is such a beast that he balances Triple H out and these two come out and they really think create what I think is a masterpiece. I don't even mind the sledgehammer shot because it cracks Flair across the back. Normally I have a big problem with that. But there's no bullshit in this one. It was just a war. And there's a segment, I think it's on the outside of the ring, when Flair grabs Triple H by the nuts. Like, we all felt like we were grabbing him by the nuts. We had a handful of Hunter nuts and we just squeezed away and said, thanks for ruining the business, you fucking... Anyway, Flair gushed blood. And we're reminded of like a bygone era when Flair was the man. I think Flair has another great match in him in his WWE career in 2008. But I think this is like a really nice reminder of who he was. For this night in November of 2005, Flair really turned back the clock and really put in a performance for the ages. And Triple H was really good in the match too. Number two, Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels from Vengeance. It's really good. It's like their WrestleMania match, just slightly worse. So let's talk about the number one match of the year. From WrestleMania 21, Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle. Now, for me, this is an outright classic. This became one of the matches that I would show people if I was trying to introduce them to wrestling. These two just meshed, okay? Which is no real surprise, right? They're, I mean, it's Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. Now, I know some people have problems with both of their styles, but when you put them together, I think it just works really well. I think it's near perfect. And what makes it not perfect, there's one thing. It's Shawn Michaels in the ankle lock for nearly 2 minutes before tapping out. Now, I think it's really cool that Angle tapped him out, but 2 minutes? It totally undermines the hold. Like, if the hold isn't painful enough to tap someone out in under 2 minutes, then why should we believe it's painful at all? Also, why doesn't Kurt just break his ankle? There's no punishment for breaking someone's ankle with a hold. This match is a great example of the deterioration of submission holds in the promotion. Now, I wish, instead of guys being in holds for inordinate amounts of time or, you know, breaking them up by getting to the ropes, what I really wish they did with submission holds was the more of a struggle to get in and out, to get holds on. And I know why they do it, because they want the crowd to pop with the hold. But then you get in a situation like this where Angle, where nobody believed the ankle lock in any match until he put the grapevine on as well. But then you're asking yourself, well, why doesn't he just put the grapevine on right away? Anyway, the struggle to get into holds would be fascinating, and I kind of wish they did it more. Anyway, this match is incredible. There's great near falls. The athleticism is great. I mean, I could have watched these guys wrestle forever. Incredible match. And not only that, the right guy went over. You know, in these matches, there's like a tendency to maybe like think Michaels is going to go over. But Angle needed the win here. And man, Angle's so good. It's such a shame. I don't know if we talked about it when we talked about 2006. I don't think we did. It's such a shame that we lost a good four to five years of prime Angle to TNA. Now, maybe when we get there in TNA Never Dies with Jenny and JT, maybe when we get there, we will eventually see that it wasn't lost. But for me, it's lost because I just haven't watched those things. All right, characters. I have it 19th out of 35. Again, just below the average. Let's talk about the good, though. I think the single best character from this year is Shawn Michaels. I'm going to praise Shawn Michaels again. But Shawn Michaels, from the time he superkicked Hulk Hogan to the night after SummerSlam, where suddenly the last month just didn't exist and Michaels was a joking babyface again. But I thought his heel run for that month was absolutely inspired. The Larry King brother fest, the cowardly attacks, and then the flexing. And it culminates with a match at SummerSlam. But I think it also culminates with him taunting the Montreal crowd the Raw before SummerSlam. They played Bret Hart's music, and I was there, okay, for this Raw. They played Bret Hart's music as a threat, because like, if Bret the Hitman Hart were to come out right here, they hit the music, right? If he had come out, the roof would have actually blown off the place. When the music played, it was the loudest pop I have ever heard in anything. And I've been at some pretty big shows, like for pops, and some pretty big shows for boos too. Like, I was at the show where Hulk Hogan got cheered for 10 minutes. You know, like, this was louder than any of that. The place lost their mind. Like, the roof would have blown off the Bell Center in Montreal, and it was summer, so it'd be fine. And I also love the catchphrase. It's such a stupid catchphrase, but it calls back to his old character. I love the catchphrase, what you gonna do when the Heartbreak Kid won't lay down for you? I know it mixes with like the political stuff behind the stage, but you can find a real world wrestling application in it too. Like, he won't give up. So I think Shawn Michaels in that run is such an inspired character. I think Scumbag Edge is coming along nicely. He and Whore Lita become quite the hot act as the year goes on. Kurt Angle's a killing machine. That always works for me. Ric Flair's the crazy old man holding your penis. So that's good. I like Carlito. Sadly, they really have no clue ever what to do with him. But I think that's a wasted potential guy right there. Let's talk about something else that had potential. All right. Muhammad Hassan. Yes, that Muhammad Hassan. Now, you're going to say, well, how does that have potential? The guy sucked. All right, he sucked. That's fine. But the character, as was originally conceived, I thought was really interesting. I thought the character who is a Muslim American who's tired of dealing with everyone's prejudice, I thought that had legs. And I thought it could have been really turned into something cool with nuance. Now, And yes, I think it's a bit unreasonable of me to ask for nuance out of a company that hatched a giant turkey egg on Thanksgiving on pay-per-view. But, you know, you could put a little. Instead, he's just cast as the evil Muslim. He fights Jerry Lawler. He gets to be presented as so hated that an entire gang of wrestlers trying to win a title shot at the Royal Rumble stop what they're doing, gang up on him, and throw him out. All the while, the crowd cheered. Look, by the time he was leading a group of men with hoods at the same time as the London bombings, it was already too late. They put his Persian manager with Kurt Angle and called it a day. They were like, forget this, we're done. Chris Masters had muscles and a cool entrance theme. Batista started the year, I think, as like the coolest man on earth. But by the end of the year, I find that he was a main eventer, yes, but everything that could have made him a transcendent star seemed to evaporate. And I think it has to do with spending 6 months feuding with Triple H and then fighting JBL, who had lost for 3 months straight. Bob Orton still injured? Surprising. Delight? A delight that his arm is still broken? What a life this guy must have had for the broken arm. I can't imagine the conversations with doctors that are happening with this poor guy. Can you please heal my arm? I'm sorry, we just can't. It's broken beyond repair. Well, can I take off the cast? No, wear the cast. Number one face in the company, John Cena, being booed out of every building. I think Batista suffers for the promoting of John Cena. And I understand why they did it. I get that Cena's more marketable, right? But I wonder if all the things that hurt Cena's connection with the fans, like, there's a lot of them, right? But I wonder if pushing him at the expense of Batista, who is more over, is one of those factors. Psychosis and Super Crazy rode lawnmowers because we respect minorities. Kerwin White was a thing with his catchphrase, if it ain't white, it ain't right, which would fit right in with the Harris brothers. Matt Hardy. Imagine this is your character. Imagine like you, this is potentially the hottest you're ever going to be in the WWE. I guess if you want to consider 2017, he might have been hotter then. But as a single star, Matt Hardy, this is the character he is. He's a cuckold who ends up losing the feud with the man who banged his girlfriend and got him fired. I wonder why he didn't get over. Makes no sense. The Bashams, I believe, are sex slaves. I don't know. It's hard to tell. If they put the masks on, they're sex slaves. Kane wanted to marry known whore Lita. Not the typical competent behavior I'd expect from a guy who was burned alive as a child and kept in hiding and killed his girlfriend because he couldn't drive stick. You know, you'd think he'd not get involved with someone who seemed to take joy in ruining her ex-girlfriend who she wronged his life. Rocco Martone, or Martone. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. I have a lot of Italians in my family, so I'm not Italian myself. My wife is a fake Italian. Rocco, if it's not Martone, if it's Martone, please correct me in the Place to Be Facebook group. By the way, we have a group on Facebook called The Place to Be. All kinds of fun discussions going on all the time. This is where I put these questions, or if you want to add feedback. You can also hit me up on Twitter at Aaron D. George, but people are doing it more here. But Rocco says, Heidenreich started 2005 feuding with The Undertaker, became a mid-card nothing, was a tag champ, and a member of the Legion of Doom, then wound up on Velocity and was fired in January of 06. Definitely the biggest story arc of 05. Yep. I'm with you, Rocco. I feel like I mentioned a bunch, but I mean, why not end with Nazi poet Heidenreich? First, he's stalking The Undertaker. You forgot to add Rocco. He's raping Michael Cole. Then he's inviting children into the ring to bushwhack around with him like he's Luke and Butch. This is just simply an unbelievable character. How did this happen? Like, they're the only big wrestling company in the world. I mean, NJPW is big, but WWE is the standard. And they got this guy who doesn't know shit about shit. He can't talk. He's lumbering. He looks like the battery guy from the 80s. You want one of these? This Australian guy. Oh, God, what's his name? He also has a singing career. I'm an individual! Anyway, if you watch TV in the 80s, you saw this guy screaming about Energizer batteries. This guy looks like a great value version of him. He's got no... Well, I don't want to say he's got no talent. That's mean. But he's got no talent. All right? Thanks, Rocco. WrestleMania. When JT and I ranked... No, so contrary to what Ryan said, who had it 5-7, JT and I, we ranked it on No Holds Barred, had it 11th out of 35. And I think this is a really good show, which is forgotten to the annals of time. And that's not to say it doesn't have some warts, which I think explains where it lands. Why on earth couldn't Rey Mysterio get a mask that would stay on his head for the opener? He spent more time fidgeting with that mask than Eddie Guerrero spent fidgeting Gloria Mysterio's pussy, right? Like, could Finlay have not run down and brought him a spare mask from the back? You mean to tell me there isn't one more luchador in the back of WrestleMania 21 that could spare a mask? If this were 2020 Mysterio, he would be screamed at by the staff at Costco until I stepped up and told them that they have no right to force a mask on my 2-year-old son. He's going to rip it off his face anyway. Then what? You want to go through a box of masks? Be my guest. Put a mask on my 2-year-old. It's not going to stay on his face. Also, the match wasn't very good. The Money in the Bank is next, and it's a really cool concept, apparently introduced by Chris Jericho. The other thing I'll say in negative towards the Money in the Bank, it's got nothing to do with this one, is it starts a trend where they've been telling the exact same story for 15 years. Which is why, like, when I find it always funny when, like, people jump to the defense of WWE creative storytelling. So can you not see that the story is the same every single year? Every single year, the Rumble winner faces the champion of WrestleMania more often than not, he wins. And even if he loses, it's the same story. Or every single year, a heel or someone wins the Money in the Bank, and his name is Mr. Money in the Bank, like Mr. Manager from Arrested Development, and he's got to carry this briefcase around until he cashes in at a weak moment. If you're watching a TV show, any other scripted drama, and they told the same story every year, you'd stop watching. So I think these are valid criticisms of the product. But anyway, Money in the Bank, this match is really good. It's coming out party for Shelton Benjamin. I remember him running up the ladder and thinking like, wow, like this guy's going to be a future star. He just really carried all the high spots of the match. I thought Benoit and Kane really grounded the match, especially with Benoit selling his arm. I'm never the biggest Benoit guy. I think I mentioned we did 2004. But I really liked him in this match. Kane is an interesting addition. Jericho and Christian are great in it. And I think the right guy went over. I think it was a good time to give that to Edge. And this is a really good example of them using a gimmick to really help get a guy over. Then The Undertaker and Orton come out. And you know, at this point, I'm not sold on every Undertaker getting match being great. Orton has just been through kind of a crappy feud with Triple H. It didn't really produce any great matches. When I rewatched this one, I was not expecting to crack 4 stars. But then I watched it and I loved it. And I think it gets kind of forgotten among Taker's other 2000 Mania main event matches. I know that it 2004, it's Kane. It's not that great. 2003, it's Albert and with Knife and Jones. Yeah, it's that one. 2002 is Flair, and it's good. But this kind of really starts the trend. I mean, I don't want to say anything bad about Mark Henry the next year, but this is really the start of Taker's ascension to having a great match at every WrestleMania. I think the chokeslam into the RKO is really an incredible spot. And it actually made me think Orton was going to pull it off. And I love the Cowboy Bob run-in. I know I joked about his cast earlier, but that's just such an amazing type of continuity thing that they don't do that much. Trish fought Christy Hemme. Angle and Shawn tore the house down. Obviously, I love that. And I'd like to quote Ryan Everett here. I will forever be grateful for Ryan Everett for finding me some wrestling figures a while back. So thank you, Ryan. You're the man. I appreciate that to an incredible degree because Canada sucks for wrestling figures. He writes, if WrestleMania 21 ends where the first DVD cuts off right after the Piper's Pit, cutting out the sumo match and the 2 title matches, how much higher does it go in the all-time ranking? Higher. Much higher. But unfortunately, it doesn't cut here. And for some reason, we have a sumo match between The Big Show and Akebono. Akebono looks like a smaller version of E. Honda from Street Fighter without the 100-hand slap or the Japanese sex baths. And look, if you wanted to see Big Show in a giant black diaper with a bow on the back, this is definitely the match for you. I don't know if it was a shoot. I can't figure it out. But I do know it was shit. So there's that. Then we had the most pedestrian of all crownings as John Cena beat JBL to finally win the WWE Championship. And while this was kind of an unspectacular affair, apparently I can't talk. What I think is interesting about it is it's notably the last time they followed their tried and tested formula for crowning their next top guy at Mania. I know I just went on a rant about them telling the same story every year. But I don't necessarily need this culminating at WrestleMania, but Cena was the guy who got like a solid year of build based on the crowd. The crowd chose Cena. We forget that. We forget that the crowd chose John Cena. Because until the end of this year, everybody's cheering him. So they chose Cena, so they give him a solid year. The year before, he beats Big Show and wins the U.S. title, dominates that division for a year, and then wins here. Now, they could have staged this at any point, but it's interesting to see the failings of the Roman Reigns character and how they try to do that one, where they have the blueprint here with Cena. Anyway, it's not a great match. And then there's the other guy they need to build. And I remember distinctly going to a Raw in either late 04 or early 05. And I like to look at the Montreal crowd's an interesting crowd. And it's not just because I'm there. But I think it's always a hot crowd. It's always an interesting crowd. And I think they're a pretty good barometer for who's going to be the next big guy. I remember them being so into RVD, you know, in 01. And in this time, 04, 05, it was before, I think it must have been late 04, maybe early 05. One of them, all night, and I mean all night, people were chanting for Batista. Before the show, in the building all night, even in the subway after the show. He was as hot and as over as anyone could imagine. Now, the match with Triple H at WrestleMania, it's fine. It's okay. Don't get me wrong. They'd have better matches. But there was no need for this match to be 20-plus minutes. When there's a moment late in the match where Dave's hitting all his big stuff and the crowd finally gets really into it. And there's a moment where Triple H gets thrown to the corner. Batista runs in and nails him with a clothesline. And Triple H, to his credit, sells it like death. Batista picks him up, finishes him off. Man, that's all we needed. If he had just come out and destroyed him, it would have worked just as well. This match could have been half the time. And I think it would have been way better. And like when you look at it, to go back to Ryan... yeah, if it's a stronger second half, it's a top five Mania. Like, if you get a match quality similar to what Batista and Triple H do at Hell in the Cell, or what Cena and JBL do at Judgment Day, wow, this might be the best WrestleMania of all time, all right? As it is, it's just outside the top 10, and I would mention, not too far from the middle. I would also be remiss if I didn't mention how cool all the promos were leading up to the show. And my favorite of which was Triple H's as the Braveheart character, playing the hero. But I think it might be because of Ric Flair with the donkey. World title storyline. 21st out of 35. Below the middle. And you think it'd be higher, right? The crowning of Batista and Cena really should carry this one. And I just think, and this is probably my problem with the whole year, is I think that a year that has both guys in a worse position than they were at the start of the year, he's a bit of a failure. Cena starts the year super hot, and by the end, he's as popular as diabetes, right? Batista's red hot. By the end, he's cooled off. He's not being booed out of the building like Cena, but that's probably not the best metric to judge this by. So they both are in worse positions by the end than they were at the start. And it shouldn't work like that. The year starts, let's talk about Cena, because I think Batista's a more problematic one, even though he's not as ruined. It's weird. The year starts with JBL in the WWE Championship, finally coming into his own as champion. Cena wins, has the incredible rematch with JBL at Judgment Day, which covered. But then he gets fucked, all right? And they fuck him by throwing him in with guys who are clearly better than him and are clearly like long-term guys who are all just like an inch away from being cheered by the company. So Christian, who I don't really like, and Chris Jericho first, then Chris Jericho. So these guys are already, like, you're already almost ready to cheer them because they got long-term guys. Christian's doing his rap stuff, which is getting him over. Tomko dropped me a beat is during this period. Jericho is just beloved. And Angle is Angle. Angle's going to get cheered no matter what. This undercuts John Cena completely. No one wanted to boo Kurt Angle outside of chanting that he sucked during his match. He's just too good. He was so good, in fact, that right after feuding with Cena, despite having Daivari as a manager cutting promos on the crowd in Farsi, Angle cuts a promo about how he can go back in time and tap out Jesus and still be cheered. And he was right. And look, all the matches Cena has, whether it be at Vengeance with Christian and Jericho, Jericho SummerSlam, all the matches with Angle, they're all good to very good to great. But they rehash Austin McMahon with him. And Bischoff, except this time with Bischoff and Cena, and it's just a pale imitation that does Cena no favors. And that dominates half the year of this championship, which is why I think it drops. Scott Shiflett, Batista versus Triple H story was told perfectly, in my opinion. I know you aren't the best Triple H fan. I don't know what would give you that opinion. But everyone played their roles perfectly. I think you're right until WrestleMania. I think it is played perfectly until Mania, where we get the typical Triple H match, which is too long and doesn't help Batista. In fact, like, Batista sells for so much of it. But let's put that aside. Batista conquers Triple H. And here begins a trend that I think haunts the company to this day. Triple H loses the WrestleMania match. He's out first on Raw, which tells you everything you need to know about who's more important. And he says that Batista fears the pedigree, despite getting destroyed the night before. Then when he loses that rematch, he pouts and says, I'm going to lose Raw until he gets another. I think this is where the trend of the three matches in a row starts for no reason. Triple H loses every match clean, and for no discernible reason, he keeps getting shot after shot. I don't mean this as a shot at Triple H. I know I take a lot of shots at him, with Scott pointed out. So, but I don't blame Triple H for this. I think it's a sport, quote unquote, that's already kind of hanging by its last believability thread, and this is a bit of a death blow for it. It's the beginning of like the laziest booking traditions, of the three-match rematch for no reason. Speaking of lazy, they just shoved Batista into a feud with JBL for no reason, despite the fact that JBL had lost to Cena at every turn. JBL loses every match, and he's put into a World Heavyweight Championship match right away. Finally, by the end of the year, Batista's in tag matches with Rey Mysterio. He's not even defending the championship at the last two shows of the year. Now, I understand there's circumstances here, because he fights Eddie Guerrero, and Eddie Guerrero dies, and that's obviously that sucks. But again, this is where they're like, we have a plan, we're not going to do anything else, we're lazy. Why don't they write something different? Instead, they just do nothing. They throw Batista in the tag division, or defending SmackDown, because they hadn't been bothered to put pen to paper to elevate anyone else. I think there's an argument to be made that Triple H made Batista. Don't think I'd buy it, because he left the feud less hot than he entered. That might be the most controversial thing I say about 2005, because I know people have that feud really, they really take it to heart. But I challenge you to go back and watch the build to WrestleMania, and then watch the rest of Batista's feuds for the rest of the year. And I think you'll see a big difference. And so I think it's a year that does more damage than good to the top guys, and because of that, it's a bit lower in the rankings. Mid-card storyline. 28th out of 20 out of 35. Well, I hope you like Orlando Jordan holding the second most important title on your brand. Because if you do, 2005 is the year for you! And Benoit murders Jordan at SummerSlam. But he doesn't really carry the division to anything really interesting for the rest of the year. They try to redo the Booker T stuff. It's kind of sad that I have Orlando Jordan and Chris Benoit. You know, my ranking for squashes is a solid 2.5. Because I think they're just there, right? That's what that 2.5 is for me. So the SummerSlam squash, I have a 2.5. Their match at Great American Bash, which is much longer, I have lower at 2.5. So, I don't know. They weren't clicking. Meanwhile, Maven gets an Intercontinental title shot in a major wrestling promotion on 2005 in pay-per-view. I think the disregard for the secondary titles is where the year really gets hurt. That being said, there's a couple of really good non-main event feuds. Ryan Gray, do you like your feuds 10 months long? Randy Orton and The Undertaker do. I agree. I think this is the beginning of Undertaker's tradition of wrestling one person for the entire year as he fights Randy Orton for what feels like 7 months. But the matches are good, so I can't really complain. And the matches are always good in these situations. He fights Batista for like a year in 07, and those matches are good. He fights Edge in 08, those matches are good. He fights Kane in 10, and those matches are not good. Okay, Ric Flair and Triple H have a really good feud. I think this is just a great blood feud, and I love it. I love Triple H in it too, because I think he plays the role really well. I wonder if it's because he respects Ric Flair, he's willing to show more ass for Ric Flair, but the cage match at Taboo Tuesday is wonderful. It's a rare instance of real hate in a WWE ring. Flair hateful, like he's in the figure four and he's giving Triple H the finger. It's such a fantastic little thing that's really missing from the product today. And I don't mean the vulgarity. People are often like, well, the Attitude Era was better. And like, what, you want him to just start swearing again? No, that's not what made the Attitude Era good. What made the Attitude Era good was that it felt raw. The show was actually raw, and it felt real. Finally, we can touch on Matt Hardy and Edge. Edge ruins this guy's life. Matt Hardy gets fired, then comes back and loses the feud. Yep. Makes sense. Here's the worst division. The tag title storyline, 31 out of 35. I mean, what are we doing here, right? Cade and Murdoch, the Bashams. They could not care less about tag teams in 2005. Hurricane's partner's name is literally shit. And if that wasn't enough, Heidenreich becomes a member of the LOD? I swear, at this point, you might as well have just taken Hawk's bones and like put them in a leather jacket, shoved Paul Ellering's hand up his ass, and had Paul Ellering do a Hawk ventriloquist act. Because that'd be better than having Heidenreich as LOD. Imagine a man that makes draws look like a legitimate member of the LOD, the Road Warriors. I'd rather have paralyzed draws than this fucking lug. The best tag team title match of the year is when Eminem fights the long-standing team of Bob Holly and Charlie the Hammer Haas. Imagine, Eminem is the best tag team of the year. That's good. The other team is Bob Holly and Charlie the Hammer Haas. The best tag team at the North-South Podcast Connection might be JT and Chad going through the Wrestling War Zone, which drops every other Thursday on the North-South Connection Podcast Network. And that runs in tandem with Jenny, John D'Amato, and JT doing ECW three-way dance, which is a lot of fun. Fridays, the gang, It's Always Sunny gang gets a podcast. Josh, Richard, JT, and I were watching It's Always Sunny, which is my favorite comedy of all time. If you haven't watched it, join along with us and listen while we do it. It's a lot of fun if you can get past the first season. That runs in tandem with, sometimes, Rank and File. Why did that name? I've been on the show almost every time it's been on. Rank and File is Jordan Duncan with a bracket-based show. I love doing it. I think it's a fun argument. That runs also with Shrink Wrap, the Psychology of Superheroes. Psychology experts Tim Capel, Jennifer Smith, and Sean Kidd talk about the psychology of superheroes. And look, on Sundays, Mark, Claire, and Remzo, Second Print Comics, I just listened to their episode on Ultimate X-Men. And I agree with some of their things. I disagree with others. But I love the show. The show is a lot of fun. So check it all out. All the fun stuff at the North-South Connection Podcast Network. I do the part everyone hates listening to in the worst section. So now we're going to talk about better things. Women's storyline, 16th out of 29. So that's really not that bad at all, right? I think we get, in 205, Trish has really come into her own as a performer. She fights Melina at the Survivor Series, which delivers a legitimate good match. And I do mean legit good, not some bullshit sliding scale because it's the women's division. But then poor Trish has to fight Christy Hemme. And look, the division's given focus. A lot of the stuff isn't horrible. I think it was faint praise, but compared to a lot of other years, it's good. So this one moves like a little bit above average. Royal Rumble match. 8th out of 33. And yes, I know, this is the Royal Rumble that's famously known for Vince McMahon blowing out his quads before stubbornly sitting in the ring like a pissed off duck. Like, I can't imagine what was going through his head. Like, sitting there in possibly the worst pain of his life. Was it like, how am I going to fix this mistake these guys made? How am I going to do that? Maybe he's considering, like, maybe I'll never move again. Maybe I'll just sit here. This will be the gorilla position from now on. They can wrestle around me. If he just sits there, he'll never have to, like, show 1 second of weakness. You know, if I had one wish this holiday season at Christmas, it'd be for my kids to be happy and healthy and my family, you know, and love. But if I had two wishes, I wish I could be standing next to him when he tore up both of his quads so I could hear the very real involuntary cry of pain that he let out that he probably got mad at himself for doing later. I think this is also one of the few Rumbles that almost achieves the Hogan Warrior spot from 1990. Every year they try to recreate that spot where two guys are left in the ring, it slows down, these guys start pacing, looking at each other, and they expect the crowd to go crazy. It never works. It always fails. But this year, when Cena and Batista eliminate Edge, and they're the last two, the place really does come a little unglued. They realize the two favorites are going to go through one another. The ending felt exciting. It was extremely important, too, at the time. Rey Mysterio has a much better showing here than he does at the next year, where he wins the Royal Rumble and he's the Iron Man. Paul London has like the most memorable elimination. He gets dumped on the apron and then Snitsky like clotheslines him to death, like backflicking him to the floor, flicking. I can't say flipping. Speaking of Gene Snitsky, I have never seen a greater concentration of zits per square inch on anyone's skin on God's green earth. And with the embarrassment of riches on the roster, as much as I think this is a really good Royal Rumble, I had it 4 and 2 quarters is a half. I'm terrible at math. 4 and a quarter. I think it does feel a little disappointing because there's not a ton of near eliminations, exciting sections. It doesn't mean it's not great. I think it could have been even better. Also, Michael Cole at one point says, Viscera is as close to a 500-pound man as you're going to get. Of course, this is the same promotion that currently has the Big Show on the roster. Historical importance. Let's go to Dave Hall. All right, Dave Hall is gonna tell us about some historical importance. Batista became the biggest star in the company in 2005, but Vince wanted to push Cena, and so he gets to switch brands. I always felt Batista had more upside on Raw that year, and wish they'd never switched. I agree. Triple H finally does the right thing for someone and puts him over clean multiple times. It's just that it was his protege. But 2005 is one of the last years I really enjoyed a lot of what was being produced by the company. It all seemed to be downhill until the Summer of Punk. Yeah, I do agree. I think it was strange to... I think Batista was hot. But I understand why. Cena's younger. Probably like Cena's less ethnic. I don't. I think it's fine. It doesn't matter. I'm not a racist. But it's a super important year, solely on the rising of Batista and Cena as Tippy Top guys in the promotion. It's also incredibly influential with the three-match series becoming a thing. The introduction of the Money in the Bank match. Joey Styles shows up, gets paid. The beginning of Cena being the top heel in the company. And Kurt Angle's last full year in the promotion. I want to touch on two other things, though, that I think are really interesting about 05. ECW comes back, and they have that really great one-night stand pay-per-view that I didn't see, actually, until I watched this product. Because at the time, the summers were always rough for me around this period, because I was doing a lot of Shakespeare in the Park. I was doing Shakespeare in the Park shows, and so I was busy almost every Sunday night. And then, you know, I would download them and try to watch them, but it didn't, you know, I just get knocked out of it, right? So, you know, it just wasn't as big a thing for me then. But I love that show. I thought it was so cool. And it's the only one that, it's the only one that looked like ECW. And I find the one the next year in 06 felt like ECW too. But this one was look and feel. And I think top to bottom, it's just a really great show. It brings back the promotion. It's fun. Now, let's talk about the other thing. And this might seem like an innocuous thing, but I think this was kind of my, the beginnings of me thinking the company was shitty. Not that I didn't think they were, you know, I never really gave it much thought before. You know, you watch wrestling and you're like, oh, it's just wrestling. I like it and I like the company. So they put out the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. And I know I kind of have a bit of a reputation for being a warrior defender. Like, I really do think he's good. But before this, I wasn't. It was this DVD that kind of like turned me around on it. And the fact that they were so bitter and pissy about this guy and put out a DVD talking about how horrible he was, I don't know, something changed in me, man, and it made me actually try to reevaluate Warrior. Because I remember as a kid liking him, so I'm like, I'm going to go back and watch his matches. And I watched his matches, and I liked most of them. And this criticism of him being terrible in ring, like, I love that, like, I love guys like Ted DiBiase coming up and saying, like, Warrior couldn't wrestle, he couldn't work, he was incapable of anything. But DiBiase fought all the same guys that Warrior did and didn't have anywhere near as good matches as Warrior did on pay-per-view with him. In fact, DiBiase had bad matches on pay-per-view all the time, right? So why is this guy saying this? I remember JR, too, saying, oh, brother, I hate the Ultimate Warrior. He was the most unprofessional. Like, I can't do a good JR. But you barely worked with him. You worked with him for what, like a month? Like, it was such a strange thing. I'd never seen the company so united. And it kind of turned my fandom around in a lot of ways. And turned me on to the Ultimate Warrior. But I think that DVD is a turning point. Like, it's maybe the worst. No, it's not the worst thing they've ever done. They've done a lot of worse things. But it's such a shitty promotional tactic. Someone who made you legitimately a lot of money to turn around and shit on them just to make more money. Because why? They're not going to bend the knee to you. I liked when Warrior came back in 14. I thought it was cool. But here we are. The SummerSlam. 6th out of 33. So a few years ago, I did a written piece for PlaceToBeNation.com. It's still there. Called The Scientific Ranking of SummerSlam. So basically what I did was, I ranked, instead of ranking like SummerSlam matches by year, I ranked all the matches that ever happened in SummerSlam against one another. So from like 1 to, I think it was like 230 something. It was a hell of a project. And I didn't consider anything else. The first match got X number of points. So like if there was 250 matches, let's say, I don't know if that's the number. The first match got 250 matches. The last match got one. The first match got 250 points. The last match got 1 point. And then I added them up, and that's all it was based on. I didn't talk about match times, any star rankings. I wasn't even doing star rankings then. According to the ranking, 1992 was the worst SummerSlam of all time. Now this caused a ton of outrage. So much so that like a year later on a message board, some fucking loser posted the link to the project with like, never forget. Never forget that this guy thought this show was bad and I love it. Like, I'm not bitter, right? I'm not bitter. But the SummerSlam that finished first in this project was 2005. And I think it's interesting. And I think it's because there's not a single bad thing on this show. I remember going to watch this live in a bar. I brought a girl to watch wrestling who I just started dating. So this show was her introduction. Unlike my buddy Reg, who brought his girlfriend's, he introduced his girlfriend to wrestling with the Great American Bash 04, watching the morality play that was The Undertaker and his pseudo-father and the tragedy of Paul Bearer and the Cement. But this was a good show. I don't think she ended up liking wrestling, but whatever. We missed the opener, but if you blink, you missed the opener. Edge and Matt Hardy come out, and they have a match that I think was really disappointing at the time because like it was short and kind of shitty that Matt didn't win. But rewatching it, it's really unique. It's hard hitting. It's brutal. It really captures the spirit of their feud. James Grunberg pipes in here. I know they're fighting over custody of a child, but the Rey Mysterio-Eddie Guerrero feud over Dominic is one of a kind, and I love the SummerSlam ladder match. I do think the SummerSlam ladder match is good. Quite good, actually. I think it'll be very good. So Rey Mysterio and Eddie fight a ladder match for custody of Dominic Mysterio, and I can't imagine at the time WWE ever expected to have a continuity problem on their hands for Rey Mysterio's son 15 years later. I mean, they'd have to deal with the uncomfortable fact that, like, the WWE's resident angel in heaven cuckolded his friend and knocked up Rey Mysterio's wife. Is Aaliyah Mysterio also a bastard? Is she also the child of Eddie Guerrero? I would like a blood test done to see. I also didn't mention earlier, but taking these two and making them fight over custody might be a crime. At one point, Eddie screams, "Where the fuck is Vicky?" Because she didn't show up. Great botch. Kurt Angle then murders Eugene. I love Kurt Angle, but I love that at the end of the match, he creates a little podium for himself and forces the referee to place the medals around his neck. Such a great touch. Orton and Undertaker have a solid outing. John Cena defends against Chris Jericho. Forgotten little gem of a match. It's Jericho's last big match until he comes back, and he really brings it. And of course, the crowd totally turns on Cena, but you know, whatever. Batista and JBL, fine. And that brings us to the main event of SummerSlam 05, which I think is the single best version of the Hulk Hogan formula match. I don't think it's Hulk Hogan's best match. That's not what I'm saying. Not by a long shot, actually. But the typical Hogan runs wild, heel takes over, Hulk up formula. As far as I think, this is like maybe a near perfect version of that. The entire build to the match was fantastic. Both guys delivered here. Yes, Michaels oversells the boot, and it makes no sense to stop the Edge Hardy match for blood loss when Hogan loses half the blood in his body. But that's the other match. That's all. It's a great clash of strength versus speed. I love the idea of Shawn Michaels being the kind of wrestler that Hogan never really got a chance to fight. Like, I mean, the closest would maybe Rick Rude, but Rick Rude didn't move like Shawn Michaels, you know? I also really like the idea that, like, Shawn Michaels could be the one to end Hulkamania. The match had great drama, gory blade drop, just two pros playing their characters to perfection. Late in the match, the crowd chants, "We want Brett." So Shawn Michaels kips up. He mouths, "You want Brett?" and puts the sharpshooter on. Oh, such a great little touch. Hogan winning was cool. All this to say, if you don't remember this SummerSlam, give it another shot. It's a ton of fun. It's really an easy watch. What's the worst show of the year? Well, my friends, I have New Year's Revolution as the worst show of the year. It was just like a thrown-together garbage show, with the exception of the Elimination Chamber, which is very good. It tells a good story about Batista doing all the work, Triple H getting the rewards. I think this goes back to the idea that like it really was kind of a perfect storyline until WrestleMania for me. And this is a great reason why. I think Scott was onto something with that. But once you get past that Elimination Chamber, this show, they you could tell they just did not care. Regal and Eugene fighting Christian and Tomko. Lita fighting Trish, but it doesn't click. Kane and Snitsky, the usual bullshit. Shelton defends the IC against Maven. And of course, Muhammad Hassan gets a match with Jerry Lawler. And I'm curious, who a match with Jerry Lawler post-1999 has ever helped? Certainly wasn't Muhammad Hassan. Best show. Holy shit. And there's a lot of choices here. Now, I'm going to tell you by my rankings, it's SummerSlam 05 is the best show, top to bottom. But I can see a case for One Night Stand. I could see a case for WrestleMania, although the back half suffers. But let's talk about Vengeance 05. Okay? Angles Michaels 2, the great Batista Triple H Hell in a Cell match, Cena, Jericho, Christian in the triple threat. All three of these matches break 4 stars. Then you got Carlito and Shelton in a really good Intercontinental match. Again, like this, it's like the mid-card should have been better for this year. Edge and Kane even over-deliver in their match. The only problem is Victoria and Christy Hemme, but whatever, it's short. Before we get to the 5 worst wrestlers, 5 best wrestlers, let's hear from Ashley Cruz. The first Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 21. John Cena wins the WWE title. These are the things that happened. Jericho leaves the night after SummerSlam. Gone from WWE for 2+ years. Undertaker versus Randy Orton. Seemingly feuding all year long. You're right. Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle epics. Christian leaves for TNA. The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD is released. It was Ashley Cruz who brought up the Warrior DVD, which made me actually want to talk about it. So thanks, Ashley. Jay Hinchy. Might be my favorite year of the Ruthless Aggression period.
Wow.
I think mine would probably be, what would mine be? Probably 02, if you want to consider it that. Rise of John Cena Batista, some classics with Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle, Eddie Ray, and Undertaker Orton feuds carry SmackDown. Also the first time Raw and SmackDown went head-to-head. I guess that's at the Survivor Series. Yeah. Man, see, there's a tradition I wish they would stop, because no one gives a shit. Except, oh, I guess Jay. I guess Jay, you do, but that's okay. I just find it's just a dumb storytelling device that all of a sudden we're supposed to care about brand supremacy. But Jay also mentions the rebirth of ECW, etc. Five worst wrestlers of the year. Heidenreich is number five. I can't believe he's not number one. Super heavily pushed. I can't deliver one good match in five outings. Undertaker's killing it with everybody else. Can't put this Nazi above two stars. Number four, worst wrestler of the year, Trish Stratus. It's not her fault. 3 years ago it was her fault, but now she's a victim of circumstance. Forced to wrestle models. They needed wrestlers to wrestle with her, which Melina proved. Number three, Muhammad Hassan. Look, when your most memorable moment of the year is beating up the Down syndrome guy, you've had a pretty shitty run. Three matches, he shits the bed with Lawler, he's fine in the tag match with Daivari against HBK and Hogan, and then he gets put to bed by The Undertaker. Fuck nuance, man. This guy ended up being a terrorist and didn't have any of the in-ring chops to bring it and help him out. Number two, Victoria. Fine in the Battle Royal, that's about what the competitors wear. Awful teaming with Trish, with Tori against Trish and Ashley, but come on, Ashley Mazzaro in the ring. And then she had to carry Christy Hemme. And the worst wrestler of the year. Oh my God, my love, I'm so sorry. Christy Hemme, terrible in a six-person tag with LOD against Eminem. Then she drags Trish and Victoria down to the dumps with her. Christy, if you're at all distraught over this rating and being the worst wrestler of 2005, look, I'll welcome you with open arms into my house of healing. Five best wrestlers of the year, then we're out. Number five, making the list, Triple H. I feel like I spent this episode praising the guy, but he deserves it. He's really good this year. I think besides Mania and Backlash, which I think are not helpful outings for Batista, he has a really strong year. His Hell in a Cell Batista is great, but for me, it's his feud with Flair that pushes him over the top. I love the cage match. I love The Last Man Standing even more. I wish he could have helped out Orton more at the Royal Rumble, and maybe even in 04, but that's not this year. But really, a great year from the game. Number four, Chris Jericho. Hey, if he's going out, he's going out with a great year. I think Jericho's, like, I know Seth Rollins is called the architect. I think Jericho's, it's more apropos to call him the architect. He puts together the Money in the Bank, kills it with Triple H, there's too many triples, with Christian and Cena at Vengeance. Great SummerSlam, very good matches, Shelton Benjamin at Backlash. Awesome with Lance Storm at One Night Stand. Really good in the Rumble. He really helps care. If you notice some of the later Rumbles, I would say from like 12 on, that he's in, 2012 on, he's in there the whole time, I think, because he's running it. He's the architect. No Seth Rollins. Number three, John Cena. Wins a big one at Mania. Tears the house down with JBL. Has an excellent match with Jericho and finished the year with some great match with Kurt Angle. Great year from John Cena. I think anything that happened to him, I don't think it's his fault. If they kept him on SmackDown, I bet he gets cheered. I'm going to just spoil something here. I think it's telling Batista doesn't make this list. I don't know what metric that works out in. I want to see where he actually finished, actually. Batista, for me, finished 9th. I actually have rankings of everyone. He finished 9th. So to give you some context, Batista, this show's built around him for a long time. Not only do I have these guys ahead of him, I have Rey Mysterio ahead of him, Edge ahead of him, Ric Flair ahead of him, right? I just don't think, I don't know what happens. Something just doesn't work with Batista. Number two, Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle's the man. All the match with Michaels, all the match with Cena, puts Eugene in his fucking place. And the best wrestler of the year for, he wins a lot of these, Shawn Michaels. All the stuff with Angle, the incredible match with Hogan. He pulls out good matches with Chris Masters and Edge. He has that awesome heel run. He really has a good 05. You take him out of 05, the year is way worse, and he's not even the most featured guy. So let's go back to Ryan's assertion at the start, Ryan Graves. I'm going to go to him. I think the ranking is fair. Maybe a bit low, not that far off. I focused a lot on the good here, but there's a ton of boring stuff to throw in the middle of the year. The tag division's abysmal. Some of the storylines are absurd. It's middle of the road mostly, a few high points. I'll give you some context. It finished 4.5 points behind the median score. If they had cared just a little bit about the tag division and brought it up to the middle of the road, 2005 would have finished in 16th place. It would have gained enough points just on that to bump up a few. Maybe won a few less one-star matches, it cracks the top 15, right? It's definitely a year I enjoy reliving for the most part. I hope you enjoyed this trip along with me too. Next time, keep supporting, please, the North-South Connection Podcast Network. I'm at Aaron D. George on Twitter. Join the Place to Be group on Facebook. Love interacting. Give us a like. Give us a share. Give us a review. Next time, I'm going to talk about a year I didn't enjoy as much. It's funny how that works, right? Finished ahead. The median year, I was not watching at the time, and on rewatch, I did not enjoy it nearly as much as I thought I would. Dear, we say goodbye to some legends, but not only that. We also see maybe the last great blood feud in company history, and perhaps the greatest celebrity match in history. We'll see you in 2 weeks on the year that was.